For centuries, LGBTQI plus people have lived in the shadows, marginalized and murdered by mainstream majorities, often with the full blessing of organized religion. What an outrage, then, that today's political religious right extremists are targeting perhaps the most vulnerable group, transgender folk, in their quest for power and partisan dominance. Among the arguments currently being deployed is the claim that transgender identity is some kind of fad, a transgressive fashion to offend and even oppress everyday Americans. To the purveyors of hate, including those who cloak themselves in the mantle of religion, I say, of course you don't know anybody who was transgender back then. They were too scared of you to ever be visible. But for many others, the long history of a quest for gender authenticity was never a secret. And that includes faithful clergy and laypersons of all traditions. I feel such urgency today to humanize the experience and reality of generations of transgender persons. And I feel excitement to be able to welcome to our program Sister Louisa Derwin, who has spent decades of her ministry serving God's trans children. Sister Louisa, how wonderful to have you with us today.
Thank you for inviting me. It's a privilege to be with you.
So when did you first begin your work with transgender people of faith, and what caused it?
My initial desire and intention and belief of what God was calling me to was gay-lesbian ministry. Back in 1999, I was finishing my term as vocation director for my congregation. And as I prayed about what comes next, I really felt the fire in my belly and God's call to work with gay-lesbian people. I have gay-lesbian people in my family, as most of us do, and I've had gay-lesbian friends all my life. So I asked my congregational leadership if I could minister in that community, and they said yes, I could. So I didn't know any gay lesbian people in the city in which I was living, so I started going to PFLAG meetings, parents, families, friends of gays and lesbians. It was there that I met my first transgender person very early on, probably the second or third meeting. I knew nothing, absolutely nothing about transgender people, but I wanted to understand. So I asked Courtney Sharp, the woman who was at the meeting, if we could meet and for her to tell me her story so I could understand. So she came to my home, and in the very first conversation, as we spoke, she leaned back in her chair and she pointed her finger at me and she said, "You get this. You really do get this, and most people don't get it." Now, this is back in 1999, early 1999. Hardly anybody knew the word outside the transgender community. And she said to me, "For many of us, this is a profoundly spiritual journey, but we don't have spiritual people who understand us to walk with us." That was the beginning. She herself was Catholic and was the second oldest of a large Catholic family. And so she began to introduce me to tell other trans people in the community that there was a trans-friendly Catholic sister. They were very hesitant to approach me. She would ask me, "Has so-and-so contacted you?" And I would say, "No, they haven't." And she was puzzled by that because, as I learned, she was a leader in the trans community in the city and nationally. And so other trans people generally took her advice when she gave recommendations of a doctor or an attorney. So she was puzzled by why they were not taking her advice. And I said to her, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. Because doctors and lawyers don't abuse your soul, but mm-hmm. religious professionals abuse their souls. Mm. And they are going to be very careful before they approach me. They will need to see the whites of my eyes to know that I am safe as a religious professional for them to be with. Mm.
So at that early point, what kind of messages were people hearing in the church about transgender identities and the struggle for authenticity? And how was it that you stepped forward in that kind of environment and said, this is what you wanted to do?
The second trans person I met was Dawn Wright. She too was Catholic. When she came to me, she told me about her struggle since she was a small child. And when she got to first grade, she believed she belonged in the girls' line and not in the boys' line. And the sister sent her to Father, the pastor of the parish, because she, you know, he insisted on being in the girls' line. And her encounter with this priest was the first of several. And he said to her, now, this first grade child, 6 years old, God made you a boy, and you are not a girl. And if you continue to insist that you are a girl, you are sinning, and you will go to hell. God made you a boy, and you should thank God you're a boy and not a girl. That narrative of being, of sinning and going against God for believing that she was a girl continued throughout her life in other encounters with clergy. I was the first person that she met, and she said that to me. You're the first religious person I've ever met who sees me as I am, who told me God loves me and that I'm not going to hell for being transgender.
I'm guessing that your exposure to gay members of your own family was a factor in the way that you were looking the way another group of people were not looking. And I'm still curious as to how you worked through your relationship with your church and your relationship with other people to whom you wanted to do ministry. Was it a matter of it was okay what you said if you didn't speak publicly, or how did that come about?
Well, it did not come from my family. My family was not a very religious family. I didn't have a we went to church on Sunday and that was it. There was never religious talk. I experienced the presence of God in them right from the start. I am a trained spiritual director. That's what I do. I know how I have been a woman religious for 59 years. I have walked with people in their faith journey for all these decades. I know the presence of God in people when I see it. And yes, I did have to remain under the radar for many, many years because Catholic hierarchy had no clue about any of this. And the narrative, the public narrative, was very pejorative with regard to gay and lesbian people. And transgender was not on the radar. That would have been absolutely incomprehensible. And so my religious congregation, the superiors of my religious community, were very supportive. They understood that this is God's call to me. I knew this is where God was calling me. There was no doubt about it in my mind, ever. And my congregation supported that. We are called to be with the marginalized, and this community of God's people are marginalized, but our hierarchy won't get that. So yes, for many years, I was under the radar.
When did you come out?
Every year from, starting in 1999, it got harder and harder for me to remain hidden as I am walking with transgender people and telling them to have courage to be who they are and helping them discern the risky steps they take. By 2018, I just really could not remain hidden anymore, because by this time, transgender people are now more and more visible in society, and they are more and more visible in the church.
Yeah.
And the hierarchy is beginning to speak out publicly about them, of whom they really know very little, and saying things that are not well-informed and harmful. And I knew that I, before God in conscience, I could not remain silent any longer.
How do you relate to the Catholic Church with its proud tradition of educating our young people, seems unable to internalize the lived experience of LGBTQI plus students? Do you have any thoughts to share with me and with other people who think about that?
It was never a crisis for me personally of my own call in the Catholic Church. Right. Can I really stay in this church that is doing these horrible things to these people? No, that was never an issue for me personally. Being Catholic is in my DNA. I could never be anything other. But I definitely struggle profoundly and deeply, and have been so angry and disillusioned and disappointed in the Catholic Church my whole religious life. Mm-hmm. The role of women in the church, there's a great deal, the narrative of the church and what the Catholic Church believes, that is difficult for me.
Yeah.
People have asked me over and over again, how do you stay in that dysfunctional Catholic Church?
Mm-hmm.
And my answer is, first, it's in my DNA. I cannot be other. And secondly, there is so much goodness and beauty in our Catholic tradition that people don't know anything about. They don't see that part. They just see the ugly part.
Yeah.
There's a lot of the ugly, but there's a lot of richness and goodness. Thirdly, I can't change the Catholic Church from outside. I can only change it from inside. And I always say doctrine develops and evolves, and it has for all these centuries. Christianity is not a system of beliefs. It's a way of life. And those beliefs and doctrines change and evolve. And then I talk about the development of doctrine in the Catholic Church, that the only way doctrine changes is when God's people of faith, their lives, their lived lives, speak a reality different than the current teaching. And then eventually the teaching changes in the light of people's faithful lives. But people pay a high price to stay faithful to their church when they are out of sync with what their church teaches. But that's the only way the church's teachings change.
Sister, you got it. if you think I was trying to get something out of you, I don't know that I was doing just that, but you gave it. That's what I wanted to know how you did it, because I know, I mean, that's part of my life. And I also know that there are so many people that don't know it's all right to struggle with that. Struggle is actually a holy struggle.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I tell people that. doubting is not a bad thing. If you don't grapple with your faith, it will die and you will have a stunted faith life. We have to claim our faith. There's nothing wrong with grappling. We must, if it's going to live, yeah. if our faith lives, we must grapple with it.
Yeah. I wonder if you might be able to share one or two stories of transgender people that you've known over the years and highlight the timelessness of these experiences across many decades.
Oh, gosh. Oh, where do I begin? Let me begin with Courtney, the very first woman I met. She was she went to Catholic school. She was brought up in Catholic school. She has great respect. She herself has a great respect for Catholicism and what she learned. But she, tongue-in-cheek sort of, she says now, I learned well what my Catholic Church taught me. I learned well that every human being is a child of God and has dignity and deserves to be treated with respect. I learned that well from my Catholic Church. And so that's why I can push back when my church gives messages that don't align with the dignity of every human being. Mm-hmm. A few years ago, one of my trans folks was in deep, deep crisis mode with his faith, with the Catholic Church. And I remember one night calling me. He called me in the middle of the night, crying. He didn't go to church. He couldn't go to church anymore because he didn't feel safe in a Catholic church. And he would say, I miss going to Mass. I miss receiving communion. And he was crying. I miss communion. I miss Mass. But I'm not safe in a Catholic church. I'm not safe. The priest is going to say awful things about me.
Boy, yes. Sister Louisa, this is a terribly important question. In your work, have you seen any signs of organized religion in general becoming more open to the lived reality of its transgender members?
Oh, absolutely, yes. Definitely. Many other traditions than my own, other Christian traditions, are increasingly welcoming. And Catholic people themselves, the people of God in the pews, are increasingly welcoming of transgender people, and they're eager to learn and want to be accepting, very, very definitely.
Mm-hmm. Sister Louisa, what would you want every listener that we have to know about the possibilities of an authentic intersection between religion and trans people of faith, an intersection that blesses and benefits both sides of that equation?
Absolutely. My mantra to transgender people all of these years has been, the truth leads us to God, never away from God. Don't be afraid of the truth of your life. That is what holiness looks like when we live in the truth. And their process of transitioning is precisely, explicitly, and profoundly a holy process, a holy journey, because they are moving from a false self that everybody tells them they are, claiming their own life narrative and their own authenticity and their own integrity to live in truth. That's what holiness looks like. That's what gives glory to God. When we live our lives authentically and in truth, we are not separated from God. And I see that. I've seen it hundreds of times. After transition, people are much closer to God. You know, in 101 prayer lessons, we cannot go to God as we are not. We can only go to God as we are.
Sister Louisa, we need to write that down, and everyone listening, look at that over and over again. Truth never leads us away from God. Sister Louisa Derwin is a member of the Dominican Sisters of Peace. Her ministry to transgender persons began in earnest in 1999, and she has reached some of the most marginalized people of faith around the world. She is now semi-retired in Central Kentucky. Sister Louisa, it feels that we are barely started this conversation because there is so much more that needs to be said, and I don't know anyone who could say it better than you. But I hope we get another chance to talk further soon. You will always be welcome on State of Belief Radio, not just as a guest, but as a sister.
Thank you so much.